All right, welcome everyone. We are live, episode 40 of Logos Academy. We're getting up there in the episodes. We'll have to do something special once we get to 50 or 100, kind of have some kind of milestone. So this is a Mein Kampf reading today. I've been really excited to get back into reading Mein Kampf. I'm gonna move this over just a tad. There we go. It's been quite a bit since we've done a Mein Kampf reading. We had a lot of interviews in between. So today is going to be a pickup on chapter 2. We're on page 38, so we'll get into that in a little bit. I'll try to let some people fill into the chat rooms first. Please do let me know that we are good on Odyssey. I know that the audio tends to mess up quite often on Odyssey. I want to make sure that we're good over there. So if you guys are on Odyssey and you don't have audio, let me know. Okay. Get this set up. I just figured out that I can get entropy working in a little bit of a different way where I actually have Odyssey embedded into entropy. So if you guys like to watch on entropy or you support on entropy, you can now watch it through my Odyssey channel. You can watch Odyssey through entropy. It's kind of like both at the same time. I do not have super chats available on Odyssey anymore. So I recommend that if you do want to watch on Odyssey and support the show, you can do that through Entropy, so you're getting both on the same piece there. So we're going to be doing a Mein Kampf reading not only today, but Wednesday as well. I have an open Wednesday, so we'll do a reading then. Friday, we're going to be live as well. I have an interview, and I have two interviews set up for next week. So, and then I have like two more towards the end of the month. We're going to have a lot of interviews this month, hammering out quite a few different guests. Some will be repeat guests that have been on before in the past, and a lot of them are going to be very new. So, should be quite interesting. Let me make sure I got my chat rooms open up here. Hope everybody had a good weekend. We had the I think our last show was last Wednesday. We didn't do a show on Friday. We had the bass barber on. That was a pretty interesting discussion. It's nice again to see people taking to naming the Jew in their business atmosphere. I think that's very respectable. Not many people would have the confidence to do something like that. You have to be pretty knowledgeable, pretty fearless as well. So I do appreciate that. I see that we got Pavlov in. Welcome, brother. We got Zarok Blinken. You're always one of the first in. Welcome, my friend. All right. I think we're open on every tab. Please do again, let me know that the audio is good, folks, on Odyssey and just in general that the audio is okay. I want to make sure that you guys can hear me all right. We are live on Odyssey, we're live on Rumble, we're on Rumble Studio on the Stu Peters Network. And we're live again on Entropy, which is something I don't normally do, at least not in the way that I'm doing it right now. I've never really done it before. I don't know if I will get alerted to those super chats in real time. I don't know how it works. I'm my first time doing this. And that's it's I'm like restreaming Odyssey to Entropy. I don't know how that works, but and then we're also live on FTJ, of course. Don't forget, if you guys aren't on FTJ, to get yourselves over there, make yourself an account. It's free to make an account. There's a lot of up and coming streamers on the platform, and there's plenty more that are going to be joining in the future. So I do recommend that you guys get on FTJ, and especially if you are a content creator yourself, FTJ is a really good platform for it. They're the only platform that does not take a middleman fee in between getting super chats on the website. So you'll, in essence, be saving the most money by supporting people on there and making the most money by streaming on there. So, welcome, Striker. Okay, good. That's good to hear. I'm glad that Odyssey is up and running. We got Delta Lima. Welcome. No stopping it. Hello, guys. Okay. We also have posted the stream on Twitter. Let me throw the link in the chats here. If you guys could repost that. Let's get some people in here for a nice Mein Kampf reading. There's the link in the chat rooms. If you guys want to go ahead and repost that, I would really appreciate it. Okay, I think that's everything, and then I think we're ready to go. One second. Just send a message out here. I do not know what MK stands for in MK Ultra. No, I'm not sure. It's very, very interesting question. Yes, I will be on JQ Radio tonight at 7 p.m. Eastern for National Socialist Mondays. Very interested to do that tonight. So if you guys always, if you want to ask questions to me, I do it bi-weekly on Mondays. I know a lot of people can ask chat room questions, but it's maybe not the same as coming up and verbally asking me something in real time. So if you guys want to ever ask me a question about National Socialism or my personal thoughts on something, I do host National Socialist Mondays on the JQ Radio on Twitter. It's every other week, 7 p.m. Eastern. Joker Waffen, welcome, welcome. All right, what do we think, folks? Are we ready to get into the reading? I think I'm ready if you guys are. Again, that for the people that want to read along with us, which I really do recommend that you do, we are reading the Stalag edition of Mein Kampf. This is the edition that was given to prisoners of war in the camps. For them to get to know what Hitler was doing from his own words, rather than, you know, some Jewish media source trying to tell people what he was doing. So we're going to be picking up on page 38, and we're starting on like the third or fourth paragraph here. So if you guys, again, do want to follow along, there is PDFs for free. You can go on basically any web browser and look up Mein Kampf Stalag Edition. Archive.org has it up there. If you do want to pick yourself up a physical copy that you can own for yourself and that you can use and write in and things of that sort, there are copies on MoneyTreePublishing.com. You can get a copy on there. Code LOGOS, LOGOS, you're going to save yourself 10%, and I do get a small royalty for that as well, so I always appreciate if you do use my code when you are going to purchase a book on there. There's plenty of books on there as well. There's International Jew by Henry Ford, Synagogue of Satan. They have quite a few good books, all stuff that's very ideologically aligned with what we discuss on the show. Okay, so just kind of a little bit of a recap, because it's been a couple weeks since we picked up on this reading. Hitler was going into, we're on chapter 2, which is Learning and Suffering in Vienna. Hitler was starting to talk about the Social Democratic Party, some of the more corrupt things that he was noticing from that party itself, as well as his experiences with individuals and learning what the social problem is, right? So in Hitler's view, when he discusses the social problem, he's talking about when you go around and you see people that are, they're not doing well financially, they're not doing well morally, they're living a degenerate lifestyle, this is the social problem, right? Pertains to society. So for example, we talk about this ghetto black rap music, right, that's being blown everywhere and made popular. This is a social problem, right, because it's damaging to society when we are, you know, promoting gang culture and things of this nature. I think it goes without saying, it's very detrimental to society. So it's a social problem in the same way that OnlyFans is a social problem, because now we have women that are not looking to marry men and have children and perpetuate families, but rather they're looking to sell their bodies online for money, and you understand where this goes. So it's a social problem. So that's important to understand when you hear the term National Socialism. A lot of people have a hard time with this term socialism. They view the Jewish variant of socialism, which is this kind of communistic, everybody shares everything in common, we all get the same lot, things like this. This is a, sorry about that, folks. This is a Jewish form of socialism. Hitler's form of socialism is just simply that which pertains to society. That's what that is what is healthy for society. Oh yeah, Mein Kampf is the most rereadable book in the world. I mean, I've read this several times, and there's always new insights being drawn in my mind when I pick it up. Okay, enough talking. We're going to get into the reading now, and again, we'll stop and analyze when it's important. So we're going to start on paragraph 4 of page 38. This is in chapter 2 of the Stalag edition. So he just talked about people wanting to join the Social Democrats, and now he is going to discuss this a little bit further in detail. On innumerable occasions, the bourgeoisie took a definite stand against even the most legitimate human demands of the working classes. This line of conduct was not only ill-judged and indeed immoral, but the bourgeoisie did not even stand to gain by it. The result was that even the honest workman abandoned the original concept of the trade union organization and was dragged into politics. There were millions of workmen who began by being hostile to the Social Democratic Party, but their defenses were repeatedly stormed, and finally, they had to surrender. Yet this defeat was due to the stupidity of the bourgeoisie parties, who had opposed every social demand put forward by the working classes. The short-sighted refusal to support attempts to improve labor conditions, the refusal to adopt measures for the prevention of accidents in the factories, the refusal to forbid child labor, the refusal to consider protective measures for female workers, especially expectant mothers, all of this was of assistance to the Social Democratic leaders, who were thankful for every opportunity which they could exploit for forcing the masses into their net. Right, so what Hitler's seeing is that the classes at the time, the political movements of the time, this more conservative apparatus, they don't care to make sure that the people are doing well, right? They want their money, they want their profits, so they don't really care about the lot of the working people, right? And this is pretty pretty prevalent today. We see that pretty much everywhere you go. So what he's saying is the problem is now that the people don't have appropriate representation in politics in the normal political view, now the left-wing politics, the social democrats, are coming in and they're taking control of that, right? Because they're at least virtue signaling towards the morality of the people or towards morally sound things, while the right is not doing that, right? Which the right is now. They're late to the punch. Very late, and many of our people have already been duped into these left-wing kind of organizations. Our bourgeois parties can never repair the damage that resulted from the mistake they then made, for they sowed the seeds of hatred when they opposed all efforts at social reform, and thus, to all outward appearances, at least, lent color to the claim put forward by the arch-enemy of our people, that only the Social Democrats protected. In this way, it provided the moral justification of the actual existence of the trade union, which was, from the outset, the chief political recruiting ground for the Social Democratic Party. Now, we actually see this a little bit differently, probably in the modern age. They don't really use trade unions as seriously as grounds to recruit new people into like left-wing movements. You see this more in like college campuses, things like this. During those years in Vienna, I was forced, whether I liked it or not, to decide on an attitude I should take towards the trade union, because I looked upon them as inseparable from the Social Democratic Party. My decision was hasty and mistaken. I repudiated them as a matter of course, but on this essential question too, fate intervened and gave me a lesson, with the result that I changed the opinion which I had first formed. When I was 20 years old, I had learned to distinguish between the trade union as a means of defending the social rights of the employees and of fighting for better living conditions for them, and on the other hand, the trade union as a political instrument used by the party in the class struggle. The fact that the Social Democrats grasped the enormous importance of the trade union movement secured for them a weapon which they used with success, whereas the bourgeois parties, by their failure to understand it, lost their political prestige. Now, one thing that's also important to understand, folks, he's going to talk a lot about the class struggle, right, which is primarily how these communist Jews were subverting and dividing civilization at the time. They were doing it by classes. This has changed in the modern atmosphere. There is still a little bit of this, but the main focus now is racial divides, right? They want to turn black against white, white against Arab, and all of these different things, which, again, you know, we should be wanting to live separately and have our own sovereign areas. But the fact that they bring these people into our country specifically to cause these conflicts is where the problem lies. Folks, if you'll excuse me for just one second, I'm just going to grab some tissues. I'm having a little bit of a runny nose today. One moment. Okay, I'm back. I do apologize for that. Just allergies are killing me lately. Okay, continuing forward. They thought that their own arrogant veto would arrest the logical development of the movement. But what they actually did was to produce an illogical development. It is absurd and also untrue to say that the trade union movement was in itself hostile to the nation. To maintain the opposite would be more correct. If the activities of the trade union are directed towards improving the condition of a class, which is a mainstay of the nation, and succeed in doing so, such activities are not directed against the fatherland or the state, but are, in the truest sense of the word, national. In that way, the trade union organization helps to create the social conditions which are indispensable in a general system of national education. It deserves high recognition when it destroys the psychological and physical germs of social disease, and thus contributes to the general welfare of the nation. It is therefore superfluous to ask whether the trade union is indispensable. So long as there are employers who lack social understanding and have false ideas of justice and fair play, it is not only the right, but also the duty of their employees, who are, after all, an integral part of our people, to protect the general interests against the greed and unreason of the individual. So, a really good example of this in the modern age. Blow my nose one more time. Really good example of this in the modern age. My wife is a nurse. And my wife used to work at a call agency doing nursing. She has left that place since. But this call-in agency that she worked for, they were pretty reasonable in the amount of work that you had to do a day. And you could work a little bit overtime if you really needed it. They had no problem with people working like an hour or two overtime if they had to catch up on some things and get some projects done. And I'm not exaggerating. This is a very true story. A literal Jew takes over this company, and almost overnight, it turns into a soulless corporate hellhole, and everything is about quotas. The quotas that they bring to people are ever increasing to a point where you're just working consistently time and time and time and time again, and they expect you to meet all of these crazy conditions, and then they also state that you can't do overtime anymore. Overtime was then forbidden. You would actually be penalized and have to clock in later the next day if you took overtime the night before. So this is a social problem, right? And there's no way for, there's no union in this medical industry. So there's no way for the people to organize and say, look, like the workload that you're giving us is way too difficult. It's way too complex
crazy
for
conditions.
Us. Feedback audio is weird. It's way too complex for us. Like, we just can't keep up with this. So they get away with abusing the workforce. And then this is where all of the good nurses end up leaving, the good workers, they leave all of these corporations, they leave society, they start to detract from these things. And this is where work also becomes spiritually devoid, right? So when you're a nurse, as an example, and your passion to be a nurse is to take care of people, make sure that people are healthy, and you want to do like a good, effective job at that. And when you're working for a corporation that basically says, look, like, don't worry about the well-being of the customer, rather worry about getting as many customers done as possible, that work loses its purpose, its meaning. It's no longer social work. It's like this negative, cancerous type of work. It becomes very negative. So this is a very big problem. And this is, you know, extrapolated way more than just the medical industry. This is all over the place. So this is a social problem. This is something that needs to be fixed in society. Now, he's offering trade unions as a solution to that, which were much bigger in National Socialist Germany. That they're not really a thing as strongly as they used to be. Unions exist, but there's a lot of corporations try to be rid of unions, like Walmart. They won't allow you to unionize. I believe that's the same with Amazon. I believe they don't allow people to unionize there. In the past, I worked at UPS. They have a union at UPS. I know there's like some you know, factory kind of jobs. They do a lot of union work at places like that. But for the most part, unions are ever decreasing in society. To safeguard the loyalty and confidence of the people is as much in the interests of the nation as to safeguard public health. Both are seriously menaced by dishonorable employers who are not conscious of their duty as members of the national community. Their personal avidity or ruthlessness sows the seeds of future trouble. To eliminate the causes of such a development is an action that deserves the approbation of the country and not the reverse. It is useless to argue that the individual workman is free at any time to escape from the consequences of an injustice which he has actually suffered, or thinks he has suffered, at the hands of an employer. In other words, he can leave. That argument is only a ruse to distract attention from the questions at issue. Is it, or is it not, in the interests of the nation to remove the causes of social unrest? If it is, then the fight must be carried on with the only weapons that promise success. The individual workman is never in a position to stand up against the might of a big employer. For the question here is not one that concerns the triumph of right, since if right had been recognized as the guiding principle, the conflict could not have arisen at all. But here, it is a question of who is the stronger. If it were otherwise, a sense of justice would in itself lead to an honorable settlement of the dispute, or, to put the case more correctly, such a dispute would never have arisen. If unsocial and dishonorable treatment of men provokes resistance, then the stronger party will win through in the conflict, until the constitutional legislative authorities do away with the evil through legislation. Therefore, it is evident that only if the individual workmen combine against the individual employer as representing the concentrated force of the undertaking can they hope not to be doomed to defeat from the outset. Thus, the trade unions can help to inculcate and strengthen a sense of social responsibility in daily life and open the way to practical results. In doing this, they tend to remove those causes of friction, which are a continual source of discontent and complaint. The blame for the fact that the trade unions do not fulfill this much-desired function must be laid at the doors of those who barred the road to legislative social reform, or rendered such a reform ineffective by sabotaging it through their political influence. Since the political bourgeoisie failed to understand, or rather did not wish to understand, the importance of the trade union movement, the Social Democrats seized the advantage offered them by this mistaken policy and took the trade unions under their exclusive protection without any protest from the other side. Now, again, trade unions are not as large of a thing here in modern society, but I'll give another example. Art. Art is it's almost like a movement, right? There are art studios, there are, you know, art conventions, there are educational things for art, there's classes, there's museums, there's all of these different things. Well, who controls the art today? The left. The left. Everywhere you go, it's liberal. It's completely liberal. Whether that is degenerate, you know, modernistic art or things of the sort. I'll give you a really good example, too. I'll pull it up on my Twitter. This is a tweet that I made. This was like a week or two ago, discussing the art of the modern society. Just pull this up, show you guys. So here I depict two different paintings. I'll show you this. Let me see if I can pull it up. There you go. Right here, let me see if I can blow it up. Actually, it's a little small. Okay. We got two different paintings here. On the left, we've got a Hitler painting. Looks quite nice, right? And then on the right, we have this Jewish painting. This is actually named Number 6 by Rothko. Mark Rothkowitz is his real name. Okay, Number 6 is the name of this painting. Right, always using symbolism with sixes. So this painting here sold for $140 million. Meanwhile, Hitler's painting, at the time when he was going into art school or attempting to get into art school, was denied. This not this specific painting, but his collective art was denied by the modern art critics of the time. And this is very telling, because this is the same circumstance that we have today in society, where the left will look at a piece like this. Number 6 with three random boxes of color that are not symmetrical at all. It's just anarchistic and random and goofy looking. They'll look at this art and they'll say, oh, well, it's interpretive art. It's interpretive. So you have to look at it and, you know, decide for yourself what emotion is being portrayed in this art. It takes much more skill to make something like that. So this is how the left co-opts art, and they make it you know, something that they fully control. So you can't go to an art studio today, or even a museum, and see like a nice sculpture of like an Aryan man who's very, very well defined. He has a good figure, good posture, things like this. It doesn't exist anymore because the left has co-opted art. This is a big social problem. And the reason the left has had such an easy task at co-opting art, and which, by the way, is a very important field of cultural life, is because the right doesn't even care about it. Do you ever hear your conservative pundits or anybody on the right talking about art and the importance of art and how we should be caring for art and we should be getting ourselves into art institutions to push more traditional forms of art rather than this degenerate, you know, like kosher Jewish liberal art? No one says a thing. You'll never hear a conservative pundit talk about Dadaism and how awful it is and how it needs to be taken down. They don't care. They don't recognize the importance of these social issues. And it was the same for the trade union movement. They don't see the importance, so the left just take control of them. And then what do? You're trapped. So now all of the young people that take interest in art are naturally going to go more towards the left. Yeah, Johnny, Nick Fuentes is not the example here, because Nick Fuentes he talks about the Jewish problem. I'm talking about your mainstream conservative pundits, Charlie Kirk, Donald Trump, you know, these kind of figures who are of the system, in the system, they constitute the system itself. These would be the people that would be akin to the bourgeoisie of Germany at the time. And these people don't recognize these social problems. Only like literal radical revolutionaries are talking about these kind of social problems. with few exceptions, right? There are some that are starting to kind of etch their way into this direction, but it's very, very slow. It's a very slow trickle. It's certainly nothing in comparison to how many of them won't talk about it, right? Like RFK, right, as an example. He'll talk about, you know, the health problem, but then, you know, he'll also recognize anti-Semitism as the biggest sickness in society, right? So it doesn't do us much good if he cares that much about our well-being. Very, very big problem that we have. Okay, let's continue. Okay, within a few decades, the trade union movement was transformed by the expert hand of social democracy from an instrument which had been originally fashioned for the defense of human rights into an instrument for the destruction of the national economic structure. The interests of the working class were not for one moment permitted to interfere with this aim, for in the political sphere, the application of economic pressure always renders extortion successful, if the one side be sufficiently unscrupulous and the other sufficiently inert and docile. In this case, both of these conditions were fulfilled. By the beginning of the present century, the trade unionist movement had already ceased to serve the purpose for which it had been founded. From year to year, it fell more and more under the political control of the Social Democrats, until it finally came to be used solely as a battering ram in the class struggle. Again, this is exactly akin to these Marxist organizations today. They focus on the racial aspect now, right? So they create revolution through these racial lenses. BLM is like an easily furnishable example of this, you know, and they use blacks as a battering ram to destroy white society rather than using the lower class as a battering ram to destroy the upper class. They just now take blacks, which are, you know, mostly constitute the lower class. So there is some aspects of class warfare, but it's not as well defined, right? Like they're not, their main focus is not class, right? The plan was to shatter, by means of constantly repeated blows, the economic edifice on the building of which so much time and care had been expended. Once this objective had been reached, the destruction of the state would become easier, because the state would already have been deprived of its economic foundations. It became less and less a question of protecting the real interests of the workers, until political acumen no longer deemed it advisable to supply the social and cultural needs of the broad masses. Since there was a danger that if these masses once felt content, they could no longer be employed as mere passive material in the political struggle. The mere prospect of such a development caused such anxiety among the leaders in the class warfare that they eventually rejected an invade against every genuinely beneficial social reform. And conditions were such that these leaders did not have to trouble to justify such an illogical policy. As the masses were taught to increase and raise their demands, the possibility of satisfying them dwindled, and whatever ameliorative measures were taken seemed less and less significant, so that it was always possible to persuade the masses that this ridiculous degree in which the most sacred claims of the working classes were being granted represented a diabolical plan to weaken their fighting power, and if possible, to paralyze it. In view of the limited thinking capacity of the broad masses, the success achieved is not to be wondered at. I think that goes without saying, right? In the bourgeois camp, there was high indignation over the dishonesty of the social democratic tactics. But not even the most tentative steps were taken to lay down guiding principles for their own line of conduct in light of this. So yet again, you see the same thing with our conservative right. They complain about how the left resorts to violence and all of these terroristic type of tactics. But knowing that this is how they act, how are you going to react to that? How are you going to portray yourself? And how are you going to take action? Are you going to try to, you know, sit at a round table and debate with these people when you know it's going to retort to them or resort to them just, you know, trying to attack you or, you know, virtue signal or hell, you know, I love, I despise Jordan Peterson because the guy's a complete sellout. But a really good example of exactly the problem that's being described here is when Jordan Peterson, I'm sure people have seen this video. It was a very old video, but he used to go and speak at college campuses and things like this. And he goes to this one campus and he's standing outside with a microphone and he's speaking to people and he's talking about, you know, relatively decent things, common sense driven, you know, common sense type stuff, things that are like morally sound, right? Nothing that's rocket science, but things that aren't accepted anymore in today's society because of this insanity. And this group of like left-wing dykes with like blue and red and purple hair come up with this massive fucking speakerphone that's like this big, and they literally roll it up and they plug a microphone into it and they just start screaming incessantly into the microphone. They're not saying anything of value, they're not saying anything that makes any sense, but they're overpowering what he's saying. You can't even hear the guy speaking anymore. This is the kind of tactics that these people resort to. So are you going to like organize like a civil debate with people like this when this is the methods that they're going to go about, right? What does the left do when they're wrong? They mass report people and get them banned on platforms. They use terroristic tactics. They love to virtue signal and complain about how the system is so fucking awful and it's a authoritative white supremacist power structure that's so oppressive. But they're the first people to tattle and tell the system when someone says or does something they don't like. They're hypocrites. They're not logically grounded and they're not morally grounded. So you can't have moral setups with people like this. When their methods are terrorism and your methods are to shake their hand and be polite with them, it doesn't work like that. Let's continue. The refusal of the Social Democrats to improve the miserable living conditions of the working class ought to have induced the bourgeois parties to make the most energetic efforts in this direction and to snatch from the hands of the class warfare leaders their most precious weapon. But nothing of this kind happened. Instead of attacking the position of its adversaries, the bourgeoisie allowed itself to be pressed and hurried. Finally, it adopted means that were so tardy and so insignificant that they were ineffective and were rejected. So the whole situation remained just as it had been before the bourgeois intervention, except that the discontent had increased. Like a threatening storm, the free trade union hung above the political horizon and overshadowed the life of each individual. It was one of the most frightful instruments of terror that threatened the security and independence of the national economic structure, the stability of the state, and the liberty of the individual. Above all, it was the free trade union that turned democracy into a ridiculous term, insulted the ideal of liberty, and derided that of fraternity with the slogan, "If you won't become one of us, we'll crack your skull." Again, just a fair display of the methods these people have in mind, right? Can't tell you that post that I just showed earlier with the art on both sides got like 15 million views, and I was getting pounded by like you know left-wing trannies with like pronouns in their bio attacking me, which whatever, it's like insignificant. And all of them are, you know, they're putting photos telling me to follow my leader and kill myself and tell, you know, death threats, things like this. Like, this is what these people resort to, okay? They're not peaceful people, and they're not interested in peace, much like the Jews. Let's continue forward. Thus did I come to know this friend of humanity. During the years that followed, my knowledge was widened and deepened, but I never felt called upon to alter my original opinion. The more I became acquainted with the external forms of social democracy, the greater became my desire to understand the inner nature of its doctrines. I'm going to take these out. For this purpose, the official literature of the party was of little use. In discussing economic questions, its statements were false and its proofs unsound. In treating of political aims, its attitude was insincere. Furthermore, its modern methods of chicanery in the presentation of its arguments were profoundly repugnant to me. Its flamboyant sentences, its obscure and incomprehensible phrases, pretended to contain great thoughts, but they were devoid of meaning. And this is really common amongst Jewish literature, right? They'll throw in like this jargon of really, really excessive adjectives and very large words when describing something to make it as confusing as possible. So the average lemming that's reading it goes, wow, those words are so big and so complex. I must just be too stupid to understand it. And anybody that is actually, you know, self-thinking and independent, they look at it and they go, this is just fucking nonsense. It's jargon. It's not saying or doing anything of value. You get this a lot from Jews. They do this verbally on like podcasts and stuff. They'll go onto a podcast and virtue signal about this or that problem, and it's word salad. There's nothing of value ever being stated. One would have to be a decadent bohemian in one of our modern cities in order to feel at home in that labyrinth of nonsense, or enjoy intimate experiences amid the stinking fumes of this literary Dadaism. These writers were obviously counting on the proverbial humility of a certain section of the people, who believed that a person who is incomprehensible must be profoundly wise. By comparing the theoretical falsity and absurdity of that doctrine with the reality of its external manifestations, I gradually came to have a clear idea of its final aims. During such moments, I had dark presentiments and feared something evil. I had before me a teaching inspired by egotism and hatred, calculated to win its victory, the winning of which would be a mortal blow to humanity. Meanwhile, I had discovered the relationship existing between this destructive teaching and the specific character of a people, who up to that time had been to me almost unknown. Knowledge of the Jews is the only key to a true understanding of the inner nature, and therefore the real aims of social democracy. The man who has come to know this race has succeeded in removing from his eyes the veil through which he had seen the aims and meaning of this party in a false light. Then, out of the murk and fog of socialist talk, rises the grimacing specter of Marxism. Now, this is really important, because this is exactly the problem that we're stuck in today, is many people see Marxism and they see all of this radical left, the Democrats, the radical left, and they want to talk about how stupid these people are, how misguided they are, how annoying they are, how agitating they are. But without understanding the Jewish problem, if you don't understand who brought Marxism to the United States of America, and it is, in every case, Jews, okay? They're at the leading, like, precipice of every instance of early Marxism in this country. The American Communist Party, it was Jewish. You look at the Rosenbergs, who were executed for being communist spies. You look at these communistic left-wing organizations like BLM, which openly declares themselves as Marxist. Head financiers were Jews. It was founded by a Jew in its original inception. All of this left-wing shit that's bringing psychotic nonsense into society comes from Jews. So if you look at it through the wrong light, and you don't see that Jewish problem, right? And let's say you're blinded to that Jewish problem. That's on this side here, okay? You don't see that it's there. As you're looking at all of these people that are a part of it, all of the foot soldiers that are, you know, rioting in the streets and screaming about their pronouns and flipping out at the public and complaining that, you know, you're not accepting their gender and all this nonsense, you go, oh, wow, this is just a party of fucking lunatics who are, like, completely misguided. Right? Because that's how it seems. That's how it looks on its face. But the second that you understand the Jewish problem, this barrier that was once present now comes down. And you go, oh man, these people are all annoying. Okay. Now, but why? Where does this idea come from, this annoyance of these people? And when you start to research the Jews that bring these things here, and the things that they openly state about white people and how they want to extinct white people off the planet and how that would be a moral goodness, Weather Underground organization is a great example. One of the people that was a part of that organization came out in an interview and stated that they were debating the morality of killing white babies upon birth. They were debating the morality of that in this Jewish organization, okay? And so when you see this, you view these Jews that are saying these things and doing these things, now you look at this in a different lens, and you go, wait a minute, yeah, don't get me wrong, these people that are pushing all this stuff, they're crazy, but they're misguided, they're lost, they're being led astray by people with malicious intentions that have something far more sinister in mind than, you know, transgenderism and, right? So they're using all of this virtue signaling and this morality signaling to these people, and they say, "Oh, we just want everybody to be happy and equal," and right, like all this stuff sounds good on its face, but when you realize diversity, that's not everybody being happy and living together in harmony. It's everybody having constant conflict in the melting pot, right? It's societal conflict on mass scale everywhere. So when you realize that the people that are giving these slogans off and saying these things that sound real good are actually malicious actors who have something much more devastating in mind for our country, our civilization, and our people, our racial people. Because it's not just happening in America. It's not just happening in Europe. It's not just happening in Australia. It's every single white country on the globe is experiencing this right now. So it's not just some one-off thing. So this is what they have in store. This is what they have in mind. And when you recognize it through that lens, you view these movements much differently. And this is what Hitler comes to understand, and he's going to explain that here. Today, it is hard, almost impossible, for me to say when the word Jew first began to have any particular significance for me. I do not remember ever having heard the word at home during my father's lifetime. If this word had been used with a particular inflection, I think the old gentleman would have considered those who used it in this way as being behind the times. In the course of his career, he had, despite his pronounced nationalist tendencies, come to be more or less of a cosmopolitan, and this had not been without its effect on me. In school, too, I found no reason to alter the picture I had formed at home. At the real Shula, I knew one Jewish boy. We were all on our guard in our relations with him, but only because his reticence and certain actions of his warned us to be discreet. Beyond that, my companions and myself formed no particular opinion regarding him. It was not until I was 14 or 15 years old that I had frequently ran up against the word Jew, partly in connection with political controversies. These references aroused a slight aversion in me, and I could not avoid an uncomfortable feeling which always comes over me when I had to listen to religious disputes. But at that time, I did not see the Jewish question in any other light. There were very few Jews in Linz. In the course of centuries, the Jews who lived there had become Europeanized, and so civilized in appearance that I even looked upon them as Germans. The reason why I did not then perceive the absurdity of such an illusion was that the only thing which I recognized as distinguishing them from us was the practice of their strange religion. As I thought they were persecuted on account of their faith, my aversion to hearing remarks against them grew almost into a feeling of horror. I did not in the least suspect that there could be such a thing as systematic anti-Semitism. Now think about this. Think about this. Is he not describing what it's like to be a normie boomer conservative who supports Israel undyingly? Because they don't view the Jewish problem correctly. So here's the thing. Now, we talked about how, okay, you can view all the left-wing stuff that's destroying society, but without understanding the Jewish problem, you can only view that in a certain lens. Now, once you understand the Jewish problem, you can see a larger lens. But if you only understand the Jewish problem as a religious problem, you're blinded by something even further. Because you think, oh, and you see this a lot. This is very common in the collective, more mainstream anti-Semitism that's starting to happen. Candace Owens types and things like this. Even Stu, as an example, right? He's still working on this. He's actually gotten a lot better. But if you only view this as a religious problem, now you think to yourself, oh, okay, Jews are a different religion than me. They're the same race as me. They're a different religion. I don't know why people hate them on account of their religion. Then let's say you wake up to that. Now you go, okay, I hate them on account of their religion, which means to defend myself against them, since the only difference between us is religion, is to now embrace religion against them. And this is where you get a purely Christian anti-Semitism, which states that, you know, in order to win the war against the Jews, it's Christ is king, man. It's Christ is king. Well, this is the problem. We're yet again, we're still blinded by another factor here, because we're not recognizing that this problem, in its essence, is a racial problem. The Jews are not different than us because they have a different religious faith. They are a different genetic body, okay, that are predisposed to the behaviors that they have. And why are they predisposed to it? Not because their religion tells them that they should be predisposed to it, but because this is a factor of evolution throughout history. This is a group of people who never had their own civilization. So they grew up for thousands of years maintaining as a merchant middleman class in other people's civilizations. Therefore, they're genetically predisposed to simply be a middleman, right? Which has a lot of factors into that. In the same way that blacks in Africa never had their own, like, fantastic civilization. They might have tribes and little huts and villages and things of this sort, but they've never had a first world civilization, you know, built from the ground up on their own behalf. Meanwhile, the collective white peoples have. And this is why, hate to say it, when you look at black behavior compared to white behavior, one is clearly more civilized. Well, the reason for that is because we're genetically predisposed to being that way, right? European altruism. This isn't a learned attribute. This is something that you're born with. It's a part of your genetic structure. Sure, there are social pressures to behave in that manner, right? But it's in your nature. Think about how human beings view animals, okay? I'll give you a really good example. Over in China, the Asiatics, the way they treat animals compared to how we treat animals here is insanely different, okay? They beat dogs, they throw them in cages, they don't care about that sentience that the dog has. They don't view it in that same fashion that we do. When we see somebody hitting a dog, most people in our society, they care more if they see somebody hitting a dog than if they see somebody stabbing a woman in the street. They care more to just see a dog slapped across the snout, okay? And that is a factor of altruism. And this is a characteristic that is genetically ingrounded into us over years and years and years and years and years of our people having certain traditions and customs, right? Now, Jews, with their certain traditions and customs, are genetically predisposed to being subversive. It's genetic to them to be subversive, because that's how they gain power in a civilization. If I come to a civilization, I'm recognized as a foreigner, the only way for me to gain serious institutional power inside that civilization is to subvert it. If I'm a white man and I go to Vietnam and I decide I want to take over Vietnam and become the president of Vietnam and be the presidential advisor to the Vietnamese president and have all kinds of white people in the Vietnamese cabinet, what do I have to do? Vietnamese people don't want me running their country, so I got to subvert it. I got to go in there and do something to work my way there, right? Now, the thing is our people aren't genetically predisposed to that, right? So we aren't going around subverting civilizations. We make our own, because that's what we're genetically predisposed to. These people are genetically predisposed to subverting civilization. So yet again, we have the blinder if we recognize these left-wing movements without recognizing the Jewish aspect, and we have a blinder if we recognize the Jewish problem without viewing it as a racial problem. There are two components for both sides. Let's continue forward. Sorry, it's a very important piece that a lot of people overlook, and it's why we have such a hard time with the MAGA crew getting them to our ideals, because they're still stuck in this mindset that people like myself, who are critical of Jewish behavior, that I'm like, you know, religiously anti-Semitic, and that I just hate them based on their faith. I don't give a shit about their faith. If they want to practice their faith in some private concerns, as long as they're not pushing it into civilization, forcing our people to accept these things, forcing it into our media apparatus, right? I could care less about their faith. The problem is they are genetically predisposed to subversion, and they've shown throughout 2,000 years of history they can't be trusted with institutional power inside of our civilizations. So I don't care about the faith. I care about their actions and what the people do. And with enough study, anybody would. Anybody that has any kind of fucking, you know, mental conclusions here. Continuing. Such were the views I held when I went to Vienna, confused by the mass impressions I received from the architectural surroundings, and depressed by my own troubles. I did not at first distinguish between the different social strata of which the population of that mammoth city was composed. Although Vienna, then, had about 200,000 Jews among its population of 2 million, I did not notice them. I want to clarify, because it was poor wording on my behalf. What I'm saying is, if Jews all lived in Israel, I wouldn't give a fuck what their faith is. If they had their own civilization, the same way I don't give a shit if blacks want to practice, you know, voodoo tribalism or whatever, over in their country with their people. The problem is Jews, they're not like that. They don't live in this fashion. So, it's like a non sequitur, what caring about their faith or not, because the faith piece is irregardless of the whole problem. We have a genetic problem. You understand what I'm saying? I'm not saying that if Jews lived in America, I'd be cool with them being, it's a different, there's more, you know what I'm saying. Okay, continuing. During the first weeks of my sojourn, my eyes and my mind were unable to cope with the onrush of new ideas and values. Not until I had gradually settled down in my new surroundings and the confused picture began to grow clearer did I gain a closer insight into my new world. And with that, I came up against the Jewish problem. I will not say the manner in which I first became acquainted with it was particularly pleasant. In the Jew, I saw a man who was of a different religion, and therefore, on the grounds of human tolerance, I was against the idea that he should be attacked because he had a different faith. Consequently, I considered that the tone adopted by the anti-Semitic press in Vienna was unworthy of the cultural traditions of a great people. The memory of certain events which happened in the Middle Ages came to my mind, and I felt that I should not like to see them repeated. Generally speaking, these anti-Semitic newspapers were not regarded as belonging to the first rank, but I did not then understand the reason of this. And so I regarded them as products of jealousy and envy, rather than as the expression of a sincere, though wrong-headed feeling. Now you see how this is developing already. This is exactly how people view this. If I make my broadcast that's anti-Semitic, and The Guardian wants to write an article about it and make me look hateful, the average person looks at it and they go, yeah, you know, that's that guy. He sometimes seems like he could be a decent dude, but that whole Jewish stuff, man, I'm not with it. You know, it seems hateful, right? So it seems like, you know, it's this this like bigoted approach, right? And this is what Jews will say themselves. They go, "You're obsessed with us. You're jealous that we have so much power. You're envious of our high IQs." Dude, I don't envy Jews. I'm not jealous of Jews. Okay, quite frankly, if Jews were any other group of people and they weren't doing what they're doing with their civilizational power, it wouldn't matter to me as much. But it's very clear that with the power that they have inside of our society, they can't be trusted. They're doing terrible things with it. Like, imagine if Jews just had Hollywood and they were making, like, cultural films that we, like, that appeal to the European soul. They don't do that. They do the opposite. They make degenerate garbage and propaganda that's actually reworking our understanding of our own history. It's sickening. And now they're just completely replacing our historical figures with blacks. It's like a humiliation ritual on mass scale. Okay, it's demeaning. It's disrespectful and it's disgusting. So I don't envy these people. I'm not jealous of them. I could give a shit less about how much money a fucking Jewish comic makes. If I wanted to make money and I was jealous that they are more powerful and wealthy than I am, I'd go get a fucking career inside of the Jewish system and go work to beat the people that I'm envious of. I'm not envious of that. I don't want it. I don't like it. I'm not interested in it. So it's a misconception that our people have, right? So you can see how relevant this is. He's describing the brain of a normie, and he was of this thought process. My own opinions were confirmed by what I considered to be the infinitely more dignified manner in which the really important papers replied to these attacks, or simply ignored them, which later seemed to me the better way. I diligently read what was generally called the World Press, or the Neue Freie Presse, Weiner Tagblatt, I think I'm pronouncing that right, I hope. And I was astonished by the abundance of information these gave their readers and the impartial way in which they presented particular problems. I appreciated their dignified tone, although sometimes the flamboyancy of the style was unconvincing, and I did not like it. All this, however, might be attributed to the atmosphere of the metropolis. Since at that time I considered Vienna to be such, I thought this constituted sufficient grounds to excuse these shortcomings of the press. But I was frequently disgusted by the groveling way in which the Viennese press played lackey to the court. Scarcely a move took place at the Hofburg which was not presented in glorified colors to the readers, much like today, right? Biden, right? Anybody with, like, two brain cells to slap together that isn't only watching CNN realizes that that guy was completely incompetent, senile, should not have been president of any country, okay? Let alone one of the greatest world powers, right? But I know people who watch exclusively CNN and see exclusively their positions on things, and they play lackey to the court. They praise Biden as if he was one of the greatest presidents we've ever had. Oh, he did so much for the American people. He lowered gas prices more than any American president. First off, not even true. Okay, half the things they say about the guy, 80% of the things they say about the guy aren't true. Okay? But they prop him up to be this, like, amazing messiah figure who did such good things for the country. And if you only watch CNN, you only get that one biased perspective, you'd probably believe that shit. You just don't know any better. That's how a lot of people are. They're uninformed. This is the problem with these newspapers. Or this press. These newspapers aren't really the main go-to anymore. There was such a fuss, especially when it was a question of the wisest monarch of all times, that one was reminded of the antics of the mountain cock at mating time. It all seemed artificial, and to my mind, unworthy of liberal democracy. I thought that this cheap way of currying favor at the court belittled the dignity of the nation. And that was the first shadow that fell on my appreciation of the great Viennese press. I'm just going to take a brief little breather, take a little water break. I'll take some questions from the chat. If anybody has any questions, thoughts, I'll address the chats for a little bit while we're taking a little breather. Veritas, hello. Snail Racer. Oh, good to know about the MK Ultra. Didn't know that. If anybody has any thoughts in the chat, questions, I'll address it for a couple minutes here, and then we'll go back to the reading. Don't forget, folks, if you're enjoying the stream, share it around. Let other people know what we're doing over here. Spread the good book. Spread it around. Obviously being facetious. But seriously, spread it around. Let people know what we're reading. Let's get other people informed on Mein Kampf. It's one of the most important reads that there is in the modern day. This is Chapter 2, Learning and Suffering in Vienna. Additionally, folks, if you guys want to support the show, I'll do a little bit of promotion real quick while we're waiting for some questions in the chat. Folks, if you guys want to financially support this show, all of the options to do so are in the description below. Or if you go to my Twitter, they're on my bio.site link. If you click on that, you can do super chats on FTJ. You can do super chats on my Rumble channel. Just a friendly reminder, if you guys want to support the Stu Peters Network, you're welcome to do a super chat in the Stu Peters Network chat. Just know none of that goes to me directly. So if you do want to support me directly, my Rumble channel is the way to do super chats. You can do super chats on FTJ. They have a 0% processor fee. It's always where I recommend that people support the show, ftjmedia.com. No middleman is taking any money from us. I think that's the most moral way to support somebody that you care about, and especially in a field like we're doing that's very political. You can also support on Entropy. I'm going to start promoting Entropy again because I can now stream my Odyssey on Entropy. So if you guys are somebody that watches consistently on Odyssey and you typically would do super chats or support via Odyssey, I recommend that you now watch through Entropy because I can no longer take support on Odyssey. So you can support through Entropy while you're literally watching through Odyssey because it's like a restream kind of a thing. And again, I do thank you to all of the people who have supported the show over the last couple years in general. We've had such kind and pleasant supporters. I really greatly appreciate everybody that takes their time to support this show and help me keep this going. Delta, so yeah, the Stalag edition is definitely better when it comes to the run-on sentences and things of that nature. By the way, this is intentional. I'm going to read the back of this book again really quickly, okay? If you get the Stalag edition, this is the back of the book, all right? Back of the book says this: this official translation is not to be confused with the Murphy or Mannheim translations, both of which were edited, abridged, and ultimately unauthorized. The Murphy and Mannheim editions both left out major sections of text and contained long, clunky, badly translated, and almost unintelligibly long sentences. So, understand, the Murphy and Mannheim editions subversively make long run-on sentences to make the book less readable. So that you go and pick up a copy of Mein Kampf and go, oh, this guy is like fucking crazy. This is just random ramblings, right? Because they make it as unintelligible as possible. They also add in slurs that he never actually said in the original. Very subversive, very subversive. Yeah, so please, folks, make sure that if you are going to get Mein Kampf and you do want to read for yourself, make sure you get the Stalag edition. If you don't want the Stalag edition, you can also get the Thomas Dalton edition. That one's good. I don't have a problem with that. That one, it's definitely accurate, and it's not, subversive. So make sure that you are getting one of those two editions, but I highly recommend the Stalag edition. It's the only one that the NSDAP actually authorized themselves. And again, if you guys do want to get that, you can get on moneytreepublishing.com, common spelling for that, code LOGOS, LOGOS. You're going to save yourself 10%, 10% on the book. I almost said 5. 10%. Yeah, I need to take myself an actual IQ test. I've never done an IQ test. I'm very curious. Give it like 2 or 3 minutes and then I'll pick back up on the reading, folks. Just gotta rest the pipes a little bit. Did Hitler hate Catholics? That's not a yes or no question. It's a really tough thing. I wouldn't say he hated Catholic people. I would say no, no, no. The answer is no. He had critiques over Catholicism, mostly the institution rather than the people. I wouldn't say he hated it though. I think the Ford translation's okay too. I can't. It's the only one I'm not super familiar with, so I can't give like an accurate assessment on the Ford translation, unfortunately. I would love to be able to give like a verified yay or nay on that translation, but I'm just not familiar with it. Getting the original German and learning some German is a good idea. Yeah, I agree. I am trying. I'm actually trying to learn German. It's just slow. It's a slow process. It's really interesting. So it's hard for me to learn to hear and speak German. But when it comes to writing it, pronouncing it, reading it, way easy. Like super easy, especially reading it. It's really easy for me. But for some reason, hearing it, like someone speaking German to me, it's like it just goes. It's right over my head. It's like in one ear, out the other. I just can't seem to grasp it. But if I'm reading it, I can grasp it pretty easily. Yeah, do never get a copy of Mein Kampf at Barnes and Nobles or Amazon. Don't get it on any of those places. Even if they have the good editions, don't get it on those places. Support. There are people out there that are selling it. You know, I'm not even shilling my code. Go other places. Ostara Publications. I got mine on Ostara, right? Get it somewhere where you're supporting people that are like aligned with our cause. Don't give money to some big Jewish corporation to read one of your historical figures' books. On moral grounds, don't get it at any of those places, even if it's the right translation. Get it on a website that supports our people. Yeah, I want to learn German and I want to learn Latin. I would also like to learn Greek, but that would be like a super far down the line side project. I have less interest. I just really like ancient Greece, the culture, the history, specifically the philosophies that came out of that place. I mean, wonderful philosophers. But Latin is a very important language to know. It's just such a like a foundation for modern English, and I just like German. I think it's a really nice language. And it's not, it's really, when you boil it down, German is not far off from English. We share the same alphabet. Like, you know, it's not like trying to learn, like, Russian as a native English speaker, right? You have to learn, like, a whole different alphabet. Like, it's like symbols that you're learning, basically, because you just aren't familiar with it, right? Yeah, the younger people learn a language, the easier it is for them. Once you get older, it gets a little more difficult. Okay, all right. Let's continue forward because this is such an important chapter. I'm hoping how many pages do we got left on this one? We got 10 pages left. We're probably not going to finish it today. We might. There's just so much that has to be paused and explained. All right, let's continue. Where were we? We're on 45. We're on the second paragraph of 45. While in Vienna, I continued to follow with a vivid interest all the events that were taking place in Germany, whether connected with political or with cultural questions. I had a feeling of pride and admiration when I compared the rise of the young German Reich with the decline of the Austrian state. But although the foreign policy of that Reich was a source of real pleasure on the whole, The internal political happenings were not always so satisfactory. I did not approve of the campaign, which, at the time, was being carried on against Wilhelm II. I looked upon him not only as the German emperor, but above all as the creator of the German navy. The fact that the emperor was prohibited by the Reichstag from making political speeches made me very angry, because the prohibition came from a quarter which, in my eyes, had no reason for doing so. For at a single sitting, those same parliamentary ganders did more cackling than the whole dynasty of emperors, including even the weakest, could have done in the course of centuries. It annoyed me to have to acknowledge that in a nation where any half-witted fellow could claim for himself the right to criticize and might even be let loose on the people as a legislator in the Reichstag, the wearer of the imperial crown could be the subject of a reprimand on the part of the most miserable assembly of drivelers that have ever existed. I was even more disgusted at the way in which the same Viennese press, Salemed, maybe? I'm not familiar with the word. Obsequiously, before the meanest steed belonging to the Habsburg royal stables, and went off into wild ecstasies of delight if the nag wagged its tail in response. Sorry, it's a very weirdly structured sentence. At the same time, these newspapers took up an attitude of anxiety in matters that concerned the German emperor, trying to cloak their enmity by the serious air of concern which they assumed. Naturally, they protested that they had no intention of interfering in Germany's internal affairs. God forbid. They pretended that by touching a delicate spot in such a friendly way, they were fulfilling a duty that devolved upon them by reason of the mutual alliance between the two countries, and at the same time discharging their obligations of journalistic truthfulness. Having thus excused themselves about tenderly touching a sore spot, they probed the wound ruthlessly. That sort of thing made my blood boil. And now I began to be more and more on my guard when reading the great Viennese press. I had to acknowledge, however, that on such subjects, one of the anti-Semitic papers, Deutsches Volksblatt, acted with more dignity. What got still more on my nerves was the repugnant manner in which the big newspapers culminated admiration for France. One really had to feel ashamed of being a German when confronted by those mellifluous hymns of praise for the great cultured nation. This wretched gallomania more often than once made me throw away one of these newspapers belonging to the World Press. It's a lot like how they praise Ukraine today in the modern media, right? The left-wing media will praise Ukraine like left and right everywhere that you look, but never ever, under any circumstances, will they praise America, right? They'll never praise the host nation in which the press comes from, but they'll praise any foreign nation that they can. I now often turn to the Volksblatt, which was much smaller in size, but which treated such subjects more decently. I was not in accord with its sharply anti-Semitic tone, but again and again, I found that its arguments gave me food for serious thought. Anyhow, it was as a result of such reading that I came to know the man and the movement, which then determined the fate of Vienna. These were Dr. Karl Luger and the Christian Socialist Party. At the time I went to Vienna, I felt opposed to both. I looked on both the man and the movement as reactionary. But even an elementary sense of justice forced me to change my opinion when I had an opportunity of knowing the man and his work. And slowly, that opinion grew into outspoken admiration when I had better grounds for forming a judgment. Today, as well as then, I respect Dr. Karl Luger as the most eminent type of German Burgomaster. How many prejudices were overcome through such a change in my attitude towards the Christian socialist movement? My ideas about anti-Semitism changed also in the course of time. But that was the change which I found most difficult. It cost me a great internal conflict with myself, and it was only after months of struggle between reason and sentiment that the former gained the victory. Now think about that. Think about that, because in the modern age, what do you hear? You hear that, well, Hitler was a madman who just hated Jews inherently. Well, he's telling you himself. He had a hard time actually coming to that conclusion. To come to be anti-Semitic was something that griped him in his mind for a very long time. And this is the same for me. When I first, you know, now I wasn't emotionally upset about it, but when I first started learning these things, I was like, you come with a skeptical air. You're like, dude, they faked the Holocaust, really? Come on, man. You're telling me they did 9/11? Dude, you sound crazy, you know? And then you start to look at it, and now, you know, you hold this sentiment where you're like, okay, all right, well, yeah, they did 9/11, and yeah, maybe they faked the Holocaust, but dude, like, it's just the Zionists. It's just the Zionists, bro. And then, because that's your sentiment. You want to have this humanitarian approach and keep yourself in this, like, oh, there's the good Jews, man, the good Jews, you know? And then you learn more, and you see how all of the Zionist, the non-Zionist Jews, the anti-Zionist Jews, are also pushing, like, LGBTQ and, you know, secular subversion, and they're also saying that, you know, even though they don't like what Israel is doing as a state, they think that Jews should have an ethno-state and white people shouldn't. And they also say that you're a Nazi if you have any kind of traditional values. And then you go, okay, all right, so maybe it's not just the Zionists. Maybe there's some more involved. And then you go, but surely it's not all Jews. You know, there's good Jews. And then you learn more and you go, oh, well, here's a good Jew who, like, stands up to World War II a little bit. And he kind of says, like, Churchill's a good guy. Oh, but he still pushes the Holocaust narrative and says that white people are evil when they want to organize. Oh, there's no good Jews. It's the conclusion you come to, right? And that's reason overcoming sentiment. It's not easy to come to that conclusion. It takes you a long time. You're very skeptical at first. You have this moral resistance where morally you're going, I can't broad brush everybody into one group like that. And then you go, but that one's acting exactly like the other one that claims to have a different political ideology. Oh, wait a minute, that one's not religious and he's acting exactly the same as the religious ones. Oh, wait a minute, that one's Hasidic and he's acting the same as the ones in Congress. Oh, shit. And eventually, reason has to overcome sentiment, and you go, it's all the Jews. That's the way it is. Why'd my screen just go black? It's weird. Are we still live, folks? Is it just Rumble Studio that did it? I guess. Alright, I think we're back. Microphone quality is going to get a little better. That was really weird. My Rumble Studio just shut off. Everything else is good. Looks like we're still live on FTJ and Odyssey. Rumble looks good. It's just on the Stu Peters Network. We cut off just for a second there. I think we're good, though. Yeah, sorry about that, folks. That was really odd. Anyway, they cut me off right as I was about to say, it's all the fucking Jews, okay? It's all of them, okay? Maybe if you're lucky, okay, there's like three or four Jews in per state, maybe, that have like a high European admixture, like 90%, all right? And they still only identify with that 10 Jew percent. But it's all of them. Okay. I'm not going to play the exception game. This is the problem, is when you start to talk about this, you get people going, but not all Jews, but not all Jews. This is a straw man. I made a post about this just yesterday. This is a straw man. Okay. That goes without saying. If you want to go and go into all of the exceptions, okay, like when I say women are emotional. Well, but my great-grandmother, she was a very logical woman. She never cried. Okay, that's an exception. I don't want your anecdotal response. We're speaking on the rule, not the exception, okay? On the rule, women are emotional creatures. It's natural, right? It's like, blacks are violent. Yeah, well, I knew this black guy. He wore a sweater vest every day to work, and he was like a super moral dude. Okay, I don't care about your exception. It's anecdotal. I don't give a shit. When people say, oh, hey, the Italians, it was the Italian mafia. Do you ever hear an Italian guy in New York get all pissed off and go, hey, yo, it wasn't all the Italians, man. I didn't do that. I wasn't in the mafia, dude. You don't hear that. Because we understand when you say Italian mafia that we're speaking on the rule and not the exception, right? So it's the same way that when you say Jews profit off of porn, right? Jews own the porn industry and they profit off of pornography. They'll go, oh, well, not all Jews profit from porn. Some Jews hate porn. Okay, we're speaking on the rule, not the exception. When I say the Jewish mafia, right, or Jews are trying to destroy the West, I'm not speaking about the exception, the five Jews that are sitting over in Israel and going, well, we shouldn't be killing white people. That's awful. I'm not talking about them because they're the exception. And if the 95% of Jews are destroying my civilization and the 5% are speaking against it, it doesn't do me any good to waste my time protecting the 5. It's not my duty to do that. It's my duty to defend myself against the 95. So I'm going to say it like it is. So this not all Jews argument is for like third graders. It's garbage, it's a straw man, it's childish, and it's purposely ignoring the bigger picture. I hate anybody that argues from that perspective is arguing disingenuously. And you best damn pull to them the Italian mafia example and say, how come when I call out the Italian mafia, you never say it's not all Italians? How come you never say that when we talk about the Italian mafia? Very important. All right, let's continue. I want to see, maybe we can finish this chapter if I'm quick. I go too far into these damn assessments. Okay. 2 years later, sentiment rallied to the side of reason and became a faithful guardian and counselor. At the time of this bitter inner struggle between calm reason and the sentiments in which I had been brought up, the lessons that I learned on the streets of Vienna were of invaluable assistance. A time came when I no longer passed blindly along the streets of the mighty city, as I had done in the early years. But now, with my eyes open, not only in order to study the buildings, but also the human beings. Once, when passing through the oldest part of the city, I suddenly encountered a creature in a long kaftan, wearing black sidelocks. My first thought was, is this a Jew? They certainly did not have this appearance in Linz. I watched the man stealthily and cautiously, but the longer I gazed at that strange countenance and examined it feature by feature, the more the question shaped itself in my brain, is this a German? Right now, think about this, right? You see, go to New York. Jews control all of the main apparatuses in New York, okay? They control the police headquarters in New York, okay? The DOA, you name it. They control everything in New York City. They own all the big buildings. They control the stock market, everything in New York. Now, when you see one of these Jews walk into work over at the stock exchange, he's dressed in a nice suit. Right, he's got his hair slicked back. Hey, Goy, I'm one of you, right? When you see Jared Kushner as the presidential advisor, hey, Goy, I'm one of you. You wouldn't even know he's Jewish if you weren't well-researched, right? But then also in New York, you go into these Hasidic communities where Jews are, And they're dirty. They're dysgenic. Their neighborhoods are dirty. Once a year, they do a tradition where they slaughter chickens in the streets and bleed them out in front of the public. Okay? Completely unsanitary. They just leave chicken corpses all over the place by the hundreds of thousands. And now you go, okay, is that an American? Is that a European? Is that a European? No, not really. They're not like me, right? This is how this racial piece starts to pick up, because you go, wait, that's not like what a European person would be doing. Like, I don't see any European people slaughtering chickens and leaving the corpses in the streets. It's really really odd. So he continues. As was always my habit with such experiences, I turned to books for help in removing my doubts. For the first time in my life, I brought myself home some anti-Semitic pamphlets for a few pence. But unfortunately, they all began with the assumption that the reader had at least a certain degree of information on the Jewish question, or was even familiar with it. Now, this is key. This is key. Because a lot of people that make propaganda today that know about the Jewish question, like myself, they assume that everybody that they're talking to knows about the Jews, right? We've all made this mistake. You wake up, you learn all this shit, you learn about the Holocaust, and you go to your family and you're like, hey, you know, the Holocaust, that's a little bit crazy, right? What's with these Jews? And your family's like, what? How could you say such a thing? Because you can't just assume that they're on the same level of understanding as you, because they're not even close. This is a very complex problem that takes a lot of study. So Hitler's even saying himself, once he picked one of these up, he was like, I wanted to learn about it, but like, these people are assuming that, like, I already know all about it, right? It's like you pick up a pamphlet for the first time, you know nothing about the Jewish problem, and at the very top, it's like, filthy, vile, kike, you know, like in big letters, disgusting Jew, Jared Kushner, you know, is head presidential advisor. It's like, you're like, dude, what the hell? This is way too much. Now, when you know all this stuff, you kind of look at it, you're like, oh, okay, that's actually kind of funny. Let me read this. I'm curious. Right, but you have to have that knowledge beforehand of what a Jew is, of who the Jews are, what they're doing. Otherwise, you're gonna look at that pamphlet and go, I don't know about that. That guy seems crazy. Moreover, the tone of these pamphlets was such that I became doubtful again, because the statements made were partly superficial and the proofs extraordinarily unconvincing. For weeks, indeed for months, I returned to my old way of thinking. The subject appeared so enormous, and the accusations were so far-reaching, that I was afraid of being unjust, and so I became again anxious and uncertain. Naturally, I could no longer doubt that here it was not a question of Germans who happened to be of a different religion, but rather that it was a question of an entirely different people. For as soon as I began to investigate the matter and observe the Jews, Vienna appeared to me in a different light. Just like if you go to New York, pre-knowing the Jewish problem and post-knowing it, it's a different city. It's a different city. You go there at first and, whoa, skyscrapers, all the lights, oh, whoa. Then you learn about the Jews, and you learn about the things that these people have done, and you go, oh, okay, like, there's Madison Square Garden and a couple nice buildings, and then, like, everything around it is just this massive, like, ghetto nigger moat, like, where you don't want to leave the center. And all those buildings in the center are owned by Jews, and the architecture is kind of basic and shitty, right? You look at it in a different light. When I was a kid, I loved New York City. I thought it was the coolest thing ever. You wake up and you go, that's a fucking shithole. Place is terrible. It's awful. See things in a different light. Wherever I now went, I saw Jews. And the more I saw of them, the more strikingly and clearly they stood out as different from the other citizens. Especially the old part of the city and the district north of the Danube Canal, swarmed with the people who, even in outer appearance, bore no similarity to the Germans. Any indecision, which I may still have felt about that point, was finally removed by the activities of a certain section of the Jews themselves. A great movement called Zionism, the aim of which was to assert the national character of Judaism, was strongly represented in Vienna. To all outward appearances, it seemed as if only one group of Jews championed this movement, while the great majority disproved of it, or even repudiated it. But a closer investigation of the situation showed that since the part of Jewry, which was styled liberal, did not disown the Zionists as if they were not a member of their race, but rather as brother Jews who publicly professed their faith in an unpractical and even dangerous way, there was no real rift in their internal solidarity. This fictitious conflict between the Jews, the Zionists, and the liberal Jews soon disgusted me, for it was false through and through, and therefore in direct contradiction to the moral dignity and immaculate character on which that race had always prided itself. Now, this is really interesting, because it breaks down this idea that all these left-wing Jews who say, oh, Israel, it's so bad, it's so awful, what they're doing is terrible. I can't believe what they're doing to the brown people over there. Oh, my God. But again, all those same Jews, they push all the other subversive shit. They're still Jew first. They might disagree with that Jew for being a Zionist, but they're always Jewish first. That's my Jewish brother. Even if he's a Zionist, he's my Jewish brother. So where does that leave us? Where are the good Jews? Where are they? Cleanliness, whether moral or of any other kind, had its own peculiar meaning for these people. That they were water shy was obvious on looking at them, and unfortunately, very often, even when not looking at them, the odor of those people in kaftans often used to make me feel ill. Apart from that, there were the unkempt clothes and the ignoble exterior. All these details were certainly not attractive, but the revolting feature was that beneath their unclean exterior, one suddenly perceived the moral mildew of the chosen race. What soon gave me food for serious thought was the insight which I gradually gained into the activities of the Jews in certain walks of life. Was there any shady undertaking, any form of foulness, especially in cultural life, in which at least one Jew did not participate? On probing to the heart of this kind of abomination, one discovered, like a maggot in a rotten body, a tiny Jew who was apt to be blinded when thus exposed to the light of day. In my eyes, the charge against Judaism became a grave one the moment I discovered the scope of Jewish activities in the press, in art, in literature, and in the theater. All unctuous protests were now more or less futile. One needed only to look at the posters and to study the names of the authors of the appalling productions advertised as being performed in the cinemas and theaters in order to become hardened against the Jews. Here was a pestilence, a moral pestilence, with which the public was being infected. It was worse than the Black Plague of long ago. I think that's a nod to the potential well poisoning. And in what doses this poison was manufactured and distributed. Naturally, the lower the moral and intellectual level of such an author of artistic products, the more inexhaustible his fecundity, and at times it even seemed as though these creatures turned out their stuff like machines and hurled it at the public. In this connection, we must remember there is no limit to the number of such writers. One ought to realize that for one geoth, nature may bring into existence 10,000 such scribblers, who act as the worst kind of germ carriers in poisoning the human soul. It was a terrible thought, and yet one which could not be overlooked, that the greater number of the Jews seemed specially designed, destined by nature, to play this shameful part. Was it for this reason that they were called the chosen people? I then began to investigate carefully the names of all the fabricators of these unclean products, which played such a big part in the cultural life of the public. The result of that investigation was still more unfavorable to the attitude which I had hitherto held in regard to the Jews. Though my feelings might rebel 1,000 times, reason now had to draw its own conclusions. The fact that 9/10 of all the smutty literature, artistic tripe, and theatrical banalities had to be charged to the account of a people who formed scarcely 1% of the nation could not be gainsaid. It was there and had to be admitted. Then I began to examine my favorite world press with that fact before my mind. The deeper I probed, the more did the object of my former admiration lose its glory. Its style became still more repellent, and I was forced to reject its subject matter as entirely shallow and superficial. Its impartial attitude in the presentation of facts and views seemed to me to contain more falsehood than truth. The writers were Jews. Thousands of details that I had scarcely noticed before seemed to me now to deserve attention. I began to grasp and understand things which had formerly puzzled me. I saw the liberal policy of the press in another light. Its dignified tone in replying to the attacks of its adversaries, and its dead silence in other cases, now became clear to me as part of a cunning and despicable way of deceiving their readers. Its brilliant theatrical criticisms always praised the Jewish authors, and its adverse criticism was reserved exclusively for the Germans. The slight pinpricks against Wilhelm II showed the persistency of its policy, just as did its systematic commendation of French culture and civilization. The subject matter of the serial was trivial and often indecent. The language of this press as a whole had the accent of a foreign people. The general tone was so openly derogatory towards the Germans that this might have been definitely intentional. And this is really important, too, because it's not just a anti-American sentiment in our paper. It's evolved from anti-German to anti-white. To whose interest was this? Was it mere chance? In attempting to find an answer to these questions, I gradually became more and more dubious. The process was hastened by glimpses which I gained of another aspect of the case, namely, the general conception of manners and morals, which was openly upheld and put into practice by a large section of the Jews. Here again, the life which I observed in the streets taught me by living example. The part which the Jews played in the evil of prostitution, and more especially in the white slave traffic, could be studied here better than in any other Western European city, with the possible exception of certain ports in southern France. Walking by night along the streets of the Leopoldstadt, almost at every turn, whether one wished it or not, one witnessed certain incidents of people, of which the majority of Germans knew nothing until the war made it possible, and indeed inevitable, for the soldiers to see such things on the Eastern Front. A cold shiver ran down my spine when I first ascertained that it was the cold-blooded and shameless Jew who showed his consummate skill in conducting a sordid and vicarious trade among the dregs of the big city. Then I was filled with wrath. I had now no more hesitation about investigating the Jewish problem in all its details. Henceforth, I was determined to do so. But as I learned to track down the Jew in all the different spheres of cultural and artistic life, and in the various manifestations of this life everywhere, I suddenly came upon him where I had least expected to find him. I now realized that the Jews were the leaders of social democracy, In the face of that revelation, the scales fell from my eyes. My long inner struggle was at an end. In my relations with my fellow workmen, I was often astonished to find how easily and how often they changed their opinions on the same question, sometimes within a few days, and sometimes even within the course of a few hours. I found it difficult to understand how men, who always had reasonable ideas when I spoke to them as individuals, suddenly lost their reasonableness the moment they came under the influence of the mass. I was often on the verge of despair. When, after talking to them for hours, I was convinced that I had at last broken the ice or made them see the error of their way of thinking and was sincerely pleased, I would often find to my disgust the next day I had to begin all over again. All of my efforts had been in vain. With pendulum-like regularity, they swung back to their original opinions. I was able to understand their position fully. They were dissatisfied with their lot and cursed the fate which had hit them so hard. They hated their employers, whom they looked upon as the heartless agents of their cruel destiny. Often, they used abusive language against the public officials, whom they accused of having no sympathy with the situation of the working public. They made public demonstrations against the cost of living and paraded through the streets in defense of their claims. At least all of this could be explained but in the light of reason. But what was impossible to understand was the boundless hatred they expressed against their own fellow citizens, how they disparaged their own nation, mocked at its greatness, reviled its history, and dragged the names of its most illustrious men in the gutter. This hostility towards their own kith and kin, their own native land and home, was as irrational as it was incomprehensible. It was against nature. One could cure that malady temporarily, but only for some days, or at most for some weeks. But on meeting those whom one believed to have been converted, one found that they had reverted to their old way of thinking and were again the prey of perverse opinions. I gradually discovered that the Social Democratic press was mainly controlled by Jews. But I did not attach special importance to this circumstance, for the same was true of other newspapers. In this connection, there was, however, one striking fact, namely, that there was not a single newspaper with which the Jews were connected that could be spoken of as national, in the sense that I, with my education and convictions, use that word. Making an effort to overcome my natural reluctance, I tried to read articles published in the Marxist press. However, as my aversion increased tenfold, I set about learning something of the people who wrote and published these mischievous stuff. From the publisher downwards, all of them were Jews. I got hold of as many Social Democratic pamphlets as I could, and I looked up the names of the authors. Jews all. I noted the names of nearly all their leaders, and most of them belonged to the chosen race. Whether they were members of the Reichsrat, trade union secretaries, chairmen of various organizations, or street agitators. Everywhere the same sinister picture presented itself. I shall never forget the list of names. Austerlitz, David, Adler, Ellenbogen, and others. One fact became quite evident to me. Namely, that this alien race held in its hand the leadership of that Social Democratic Party, with whose minor representatives I had been disputing for months past. I was happy at last to know for certain that the Jew was not a German. Thus I learnt to know thoroughly those who were leading our people astray. 1 year in Vienna had sufficed to convince me that no worker is so rooted in his preconceived notions that he will not surrender them in face of better and clearer arguments and explanations. Gradually, I became an expert in the doctrine of the Marxists, and used this knowledge as an instrument to drive home my own firm convictions. I was successful in nearly every case. The great masses can be rescued, but a lot of time and a great deal of patience must be devoted to such work. A Jew, on the other hand, can never be rescued from his fixed notions. I was then simple enough to attempt to show them the absurdity of their teaching. Within my small circle, I talked to them until my throat ached and my voice grew hoarse. I believed that I could finally convince them of the danger inherent in the Marxist nonsense. But I achieved the very opposite. It seemed to me that a growing insight into the disastrous effects of the social democratic doctrine in theory and in practice only served to strengthen their opposition. The more I debated with them, the more familiar I became with their tactics in debate. At the outset, they counted upon the stupidity of their opponents. But when they got so entangled that they could not find a way out, they played the trick of acting the innocent simpleton. They do this all the time, by the way. If you challenge a Jew on, like, the Mayorkas and what he's doing with the border, though, I didn't even know that the head of the border was Mayorkas. I don't know anything about Mayorkas. I don't know. I can't tell you. So if they get trapped in their argument, they play oblivious. Should they fail, in spite of their tricks of logic, they acted as if they could not understand the counter-arguments, and feeling themselves cornered, hastily transferred the discussion to another field. They uttered truisms and platitudes, and if you accepted these, took this acceptance as applying to other problems and matters, differing essentially from the original theme. Sound familiar? If you cornered them on this point, they would escape again, and you could not force them to make any precise statement. Whenever one tried to get a firm grip on any one of these apostles, one's hand grasped only a slimy jelly, which slipped through their fingers, but coagulated again a moment afterwards. If your arguments were so telling that your adversary felt forced to give in on account of those listening, and if you then thought at last that you had gained ground, a surprise was in store for you on the following day. The Jew would be utterly oblivious to what had happened the day before, and he would start once again by repeating his former absurdities, as if nothing had happened. Should you become indignant and remind him of yesterday's defeat, he pretended astonishment and could not remember anything, except that on the previous day he had proved that his statements were correct. Sometimes I was dumbfounded. I do not know what amazed me more, their quickness in repartee or the artful way in which they dressed up their falsehoods. I gradually came to hate them. Yet all this had its good side, because the better I came to know the real leaders, or at least the propagators of social democracy, the more did my love for my own people increase accordingly. Considering the satanic skill which these evil counselors displayed, who could blame their unfortunate victims? Indeed, I found it extremely difficult to prove match for the dialectic perfidy of that race. By the way, Tannen Cures, I will address your retardation once I'm done reading. How futile was it to try to win over such people, seeing that they distorted the truth, denied the very words they had just uttered, and used them again a few moments afterwards to serve their own ends in argument. The better I came to know the Jew, the easier it was to excuse the workers. In my opinion, the most culpable were not to be found among the workers, but rather among those who did not think it worthwhile to take the trouble to sympathize with these, and in accordance with the iron law of justice, to give to the hardworking son of the people what was his, while at the same time executing his seducer and corrupter. Moved by my own daily experiences, I now began to investigate more thoroughly the sources of the Marxist teaching itself. Its effects were well known to me in detail. One needed only a little imagination in order to be able to forecast the inevitable consequences. The only question now was, did the founders foresee the effects of their work in the form which it was effective eventually to assume, or were the founders themselves the victims of an error? So this is really important. So what he's saying is, these Jews that are, like, doing all this Marxist shit, are they just dumb? Like, do they not realize how destructive this will be if it wins? Or are they doing this on purpose? To my mind, both alternatives were possible. If the second question had to be answered in the affirmative, then it was the duty of every thinking person to push his way into the forefront of this sinister movement with a view of preventing it from producing the worst possible results. But if it were the first question which had to be answered in the affirmative, then it must be admitted that the original authors of this evil, which has infected the nations, were devils incarnate, for only the brain of a monster, and not that of a man, could plan an organization whose activities must finally bring about the collapse of human civilization and turn this world into a desert waste. Such being the case, the only alternative left was to fight, and in that flight, to employ all the weapons which the human spirit, human intellect, and human will could furnish, leaving it to fate to decide in whose favor the balance should tilt. I began to gather information about the authors of this teaching, with a view to studying the principles of the movement. The fact that I attained my object sooner than I could have anticipated, as due to the insight into the Jewish question which I had recently gained, slight though it was. This newly acquired knowledge alone enabled me to make a practical comparison between reality and the theoretical talk of the founders of social democracy, because I now understood the language of the Jew. I realized that the Jew uses language for the purpose of dissimulating his thoughts, or at least veiling them, so that his real aim cannot be discovered in his words, but rather by reading between the lines. I'm going to give you a really good example of this. When the Jews go, "Oh my God, what Israel is doing, they're like the Nazis. They're like the Nazis," right? So the normal people who know nothing about history, they look at this and go, "Oh, well, wow, that Jew is like making a moral statement." But if you know the Jew very well, you realize, wait a minute, he's not making a moral statement. He's making a half-moral statement. He's saying, "Oh, yeah, yeah, so what Jews are doing over there is bad. Yeah, that's common sense. Anyone with a fucking brain understands that." But what he's actually telling you is the biggest evil in history is the solution to the Jewish problem. Therefore, never look at National Socialism, never look at the Nazis, because they're evil, just like the Zionists. It's what this retard in the chat room on Rumble Studios is doing right now. Might be a Jew. Let's continue forward. This was the moment at which my opinions underwent the greatest transformation which I had as yet experienced. From being a soft-hearted cosmopolitan, I became ardently anti-Semitic. Only on one further occasion, and that for the last time, did I give way to oppressing thoughts which caused me some moments of profound anxiety. As I critically reviewed the activities of the Jewish people throughout long periods of history, I became perplexed and asked myself whether, for inscrutable reasons beyond the comprehension of poor mortals such as ourselves, destiny might not have irrevocably decreed that the final victory should go to this small people. May it not be that this people, which lives only for the things of this earth, has been promised the earth as a reward? Have we, from our objective point of view, a right to fight for self-preservation? Or is this right subjective? Fate answered the question for me, inasmuch as it led me to make a detached and exhaustive inquiry into the Marxist teaching and the activities of the Jewish people in connection with it. The Jewish doctrine of Marxism repudiates the aristocratic principle of nature and substitutes for the eternal right of might and strength the dead weight of sheer numbers. Thus, it denies the individual worth of the human personality, disputes the teaching that nationality and race are of primary significance, and by doing this, deprives man of the very foundations of his existence and civilization. If the Marxist teaching were to be accepted as the foundation of the life of the universe, it would lead to the disappearance of all order that is conceivable to the human mind. And thus, the adoption of such a law would provoke chaos in the structure of the greatest organism that we know, with the result that the inhabitants of this earthly planet would finally disappear. Should the Jew, with the aid of his Marxist creed, triumph over the peoples of this world, his crown will be the funeral wreath of mankind, and this planet will once again follow its orbit through ether, devoid of human life, as it did millions of years ago. Nature, the eternal, takes merciless vengeance on those who defy her laws. Therefore, I believe today that my conduct is in accordance with the will of the Almighty Creator. In resisting the Jew, I am defending the handiwork of the Lord. That's chapter 2. It's one of the most powerful pages in any book I've ever read. Fantastic read. See a couple people asking where they can get the book. MoneyTreePublishing.com, code LOGOS, L-O-G-O-S. You're going to save yourself 10% on the purchase. You can get other books on there, too. There's The International Jew by Henry Ford. Quite a few other things going on around there. So make sure that you guys go there. We got to close it up. I am at the two-hour mark. Going to be finishing the show here. If you guys want to support the show, share it around. Share it around. Take some clips of the show. Put them on Twitter. I'll repost them up onto my page. Share it around, folks. Get the message out there. Again, if you guys do want to support the show even further, it is absolutely not obligatory, but you are always welcome to do so. You can financially support the show with Super Chats. You can do so on ftjmedia.com. We're live on there. There is a no processor fee for Super Chats over there. You can do Super Chats on Entropy. It's entropystream.live. And I'm Logos Revealed. I think it's entropystream.live/app/Logos Revealed. No. Entropystream.live/Logos Revealed. Simple as that. You can no longer do Super Chats on Odyssey. So if you have to do them through Entropy, if you want to do it as an Odyssey viewer. Also, if you guys want to support on Rumble, just a friendly reminder, if you guys do Super Chats on Rumble, anything that is done on the Stu Peters Network goes to the network. Anything that is done on my personal Rumble goes to me. I don't get anything from the Stu Peters Network, but you always are welcome to support the network. It is encouraged as well, as I am very grateful that Stu has given me this platform. I want to thank you guys very much for listening today. We got to finish up Chapter 2, which I'm very happy we finished that. On Wednesday, I'll be live again, and I'm going to be picking up on Chapter 3 of Mein Kampf, and we'll continue with our reading. Friday, I have an interview coming up. I will promote that on Wednesday. You said I look a little younger. I shaved. That's probably why. This person in the chat room with all of the subversive rhetoric about Hitler being a Zionist, you like literally aren't listening to anything. You're not reading along with this book at all. You have no idea what you're talking about. You're very lost. I don't know if you're just like emotionally connected to it. It seems that way because you're very very stern about it, but it's very subversive. So if you want to have a discussion about it, we can have a discussion about it, but it's extremely subversive. I don't know if you know that or not, but it's very subversive. Okay, with that said, we're going to close it out, folks. I want to thank you guys very much for watching. I do apologize. Can't stick around to read any Super Chats or anything because someone else is going to come on the network right after me here. So if you guys do want a Super Chat, you can do so offline. You don't have to do it online. We've got like crypto wallets and stuff, too, if you like it that way. Link is in the description. Link is in the bio on my Twitter page. Thank you guys again. Really appreciate you all for watching. I will be live Wednesday, 4 p.m. Eastern, with Chapter 3 of Mein Kampf. We're going to be starting that one up, okay? Have a wonderful evening, and I will see you guys Wednesday. Thank you.